Two scientists at the United States Geological Survey, Jim Bodkin and Brenda Bellicky, were in the meantime intrigued by a second biological mystery in local wildlife populations. Scientists funded by a trust established with proceeds from the Exxon legal settlement had discovered elevated levels of an enzyme known as P450 in sea otters and harlequin ducks. Biologists sometimes track the enzyme because it increases in an animal's liver if the creature is exposed to oil or other pollutants. Where was the pollution coming from? All of the scientists studying the Prince William Sound could see that residual oil on the surface of beaches was declining almost to the vanishing point, and that tides and rain were chipping away at what little remained on the surfaces of rocks. Did significant quantities of oil that nobody could see persist around the sound, and were they somehow getting into the sea otter's food chain or ecosystem? If there was persistent oil, it had to lie below the surface. Jeep Rice, a biologist at Auk Bay who specialized in toxicology, Mandy Lindeberg, and Jeffrey Short recruited a statistician to help them design a random sampling on the Sound's beaches. On each beach segment, they would stretch out surveyor's tape and implant stakes to initially divide beaches into squares at randomly selected locations, and then dig. Short feared that the whole project could prove to be an embarrassment. They would dig 7,000 holes, spend hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars, and find perhaps 4 or 5 pockets of persistent Valdez oil. As it turned out, Mandy Lindeberg's pit-digging teams almost immediately struck fresh oil, oil that had not been weatherized into relatively harmless tar balls, but which seemed to be preserved beneath the rocks, as fresh and toxic as the day it spilled from the Exxon Valdez. Her initial findings meant that fresh oil had survived in many more places inhabited by the Sound's wildlife than had previously been contemplated, which might have implications for ExxonMobil's liability under the reopener clause. Accounts of her initial findings reached the Alaskan press in May 2001. "Within about a week," recalled her colleague Jeep Rice, "she's being followed by the ExxonMobil cruise ship." Letters arrived at Auk Bay from O'Melveny & Myers, a large corporate law firm based in Los Angeles. They contained Freedom of Information Act requests from ExxonMobil, demanding all of the documents, plans, and preliminary research findings in the federal government's possession concerning not only the 7,000-hole study Lindeberg had started, but other studies the Auk Bay scientists had undertaken about the possible toxic effects of oil on the environment. Jeffrey Short published a newspaper essay that summer in which he described the findings of NOAA's work examining the legacy of the Exxon Valdez spill. "Much more oil was found than anticipated, around 200 times more than claimed by Exxon's contractor. Sea otters and some bird species that forage on beaches where oil remained beneath the surface have biochemical markers that indicate they are still exposed to oil. It appears that oil may still be a factor impeding their recovery, possibly through ingestion of oiled prey." The Auk Bay scientists knew that their findings would be provocative, but the response they drew this time went beyond any line of argument they had heard before. David S. Page, a professor at Bowdoin College in Maine and a scientist under contract with ExxonMobil, published a rejoinder that came close to accusing the Auk Bay scientists of faking their evidence. It was Page, as it turned out, who had overseen the effort to shadow Lindeberg around the Sound during the summer. After inspecting the beaches studied, he wrote, "We saw no evidence that Short dug 7,000 pits. Had thousands been dug, we would have located many more." The pit sites he could find were chosen subjectively by the NOAA team, he argued. The government scientists had employed an approach that exaggerates the extent of remaining residues. It indicates a strong bias in Short's study and raises questions about the scientific validity of its conclusions. "Overall," Page wrote, "Prince William Sound today is as healthy as it would have been if the spill hadn't happened." Page's published accusations prompted an internal review at NOAA to determine whether Short and his colleagues had indeed committed fraud. "It's against the law for civil servants to take the public's money and make stuff up," as Short put it later. Eventually, the investigators exonerated the Auk Bay team. Short hired lawyers and fired off cease and desist letters to Page and to the administration of Bowdoin College. He accused his adversary of defamation. Neither Page nor the college took any action in response. David Page was an academic scientist who had been working on the biological effects of oil spills since the mid-1980s. After the Exxon Valdez accident, he received contracts from the Oil Corporation, as well as from other funders, such as the state of Maine. Over the years, he had come to regard the government scientists at NOAA as rent-seekers who perpetuated a narrative of persistent oil pollution in order to justify their professional funding and projects. "It's like the Arabian Nights. If you run out of stories, you get your head cut off," he said. "They kept doing research long after it would do any good." It was with Page's collaboration that ExxonMobil began to deliver the Freedom of Information Act, FOIA requests, to the Auk Bay laboratories at a rate sometimes as high as 4 per week. Whenever Short or Rice made a public presentation of their findings, an Exxon lawyer, biologist, or chemist would be in the audience, and the scientists would sometimes stand up to make an out-and-out attack on our work, Rice recalled. At one conference in San Diego, Rice had heard enough. He got up and told them, "I thought it was a classless act. People attending were shocked. It's not something you normally see."